This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Well, last weekend, I went to the Los Angeles Women's March with about 750,000 other people. And I hope lots of you were marching in your hometowns and cities as well. I got to march. I got to hear speeches. I got to see friends. I got to see really good signs. People had really good signs in LA. I'm just going to say that. And I actually got to hear Helen Reddy sing I Am Woman a cappella from the stage, which was pretty historic. And I think probably if you're under 30, you don't know who I'm talking about, but you can just Google that. So it's been a busy week for the new administration, stripping lots of people of their rights, and they're apparently not slowing down. So we've got to keep going, those of us who are on the opposition. And sometimes that's hard, but I've got two people on my show today who personally inspire me, and I hope once you hear them will inspire you in various ways. I actually met them at the Sex Down South Conference in Atlanta, Georgia in October, and I'm so glad to have them on the show. Let me tell you about them and their organization. The organization is called Afrosexology, and it provides comprehensive, pleasure-based education centered around the narratives and liberation of Black people. They curate community discussions, educational materials, and sex-positive events that cover topics such as masturbation, self-love, enhancing communication in relationships, radical twerking, oral sex, body agency, and much more. They work with diverse groups, including sexuality professionals, community organizations, individuals, parents, youth, spiritual communities, universities, and anyone else who wants to live a sex-positive life. Their mission is to educate, explore, and reclaim Black sexuality by promoting Black self-empowerment through sexual liberation. They just celebrated their first birthday and are proud to have worked with over 600 individuals just this year alone. And I have the founders and the power behind Afrosexology, Delisha Saw and Rafaela Fialo. Hi.
Hi.
Hey.
How are you?
Thanks so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us on.
It's exciting.
So I went to your workshop at Sex Down South, which I've talked about on the show a couple times, which was really incredible, called Black Sexuality as a Path to Black Liberation, something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And it was really, it was really, really incredible. It was like 3 hours of really intense stuff. And you guys created the space for people to really open up and talk about their own sexual experiences, but also their experiences just in the world and how that affected their sexuality, like on a number of levels. And we're gonna get to talk about that. But I wanted to start just by asking each of you to tell me a little bit about your own sex ed growing up. Like, what did you learn about sex and sexuality when you were a kid? And who did you learn it from? Delisha, you want to go first? Yeah, I know. I have to like sort of play referee. Delisha will go first. Okay.
Okay. I will say I learned it intentionally from no one. I grew up in a pretty conservative West African home. I'm Liberian, very proud. But there were no conversations around sex, around my body, around relationships, around love. I don't think I've like ever even seen my parents like kiss. Like it was just very much no conversations around it. I remember when I first got my period, my mother handed me a sanitary napkin. I was just like, here. Or she literally called it a sanitary. She was like, here's a sanitary napkin. And I was like, what the hell? And I am just naturally a nerd. And so I was like, I had to research everything that's happening to my body. And so I was the person who was researching, what is my menstruation cycle? Like, what does this mean to my body? To the point where I was researching, like, how do you kiss someone? And how do you hold hands? And all of the stuff. So I think I just naturally read so much to where I became a knowledgeable person and wanted to share that information. I will say that even though no one was directly talking to me about sex, I was receiving a lot of confusing messages around Black sexuality, around like how women were hypersexual. There was so many images of naked or like scantily dressed like women, Black women, like in music videos. And like, but knowing that was like, that made you not wifeable, but that was also like something that people wanted and that we were supposed to be striving for. I know that like at a very young age, my body seemed or felt like it was being more sexualized because my boobs grew in and my ass grew in. And I remember being really uncomfortable and like wearing hoodies like all through middle school because I didn't want anyone to like see my body. I remember at the age where older men in the communities, their hugs got a little bit longer. And I think I was like 13. And so while I wasn't really getting like the direct conversation about like sex is this, sex is that, there were just so many messages coming at me about my body and that it was sexualized, but it was too sexualized and that wasn't good and that was going to make me a bad person or no one was going to want to marry me, even though I wasn't even thinking about marriage. So it was just a really confusing time growing up and just so much silence, yet like very, very loud and clear messages. And I think that was what probably led me into becoming a sex educator.
And Rafaela, what about you?
Well, I would say outside of the very little sex education in school where we just had to label body parts and have very brief conversations, there wasn't a lot of sex education, but a lot of sex messages. Also grew up in church, so definitely had the idea when I was younger that I should wait until I was married, but never really bought into that. I mean, I was very in tune with my body and masturbated at a very early age. So I knew that I had feelings and that I wanted to act on them, but no one ever really talked to me about that. But opposite of Delisha, when I got my period, I'm telling you, my aunt was called, my grandma was called, everyone is excited, and I'm just sitting there like, why are you guys, like, part of my business everywhere about this? So there was that. Also had older cousins who gave me very open, incorrect information about sex that I didn't know was wrong until I started really exploring on my own. But I would say I was very, very curious, and I did a lot of education exploration on my own, but it was all secretive. I never talked to anyone about it except for, again, those older cousins who had no idea what they were talking about. So kind of got into that. Also have some unwanted sexual experiences, like that's very common at a young age and also as I started going to young adulthood. So knowing that there was really no one that I thought I could talk to about what was going on, the feelings that I was having, who to go to learn more about agency and to explore my sexuality in a more powerful and liberating way, it's kind of what led me to take more of a leadership role when I got to college and I started talking to my peers and like my dorm mates about sex and sexuality. And I was kind of like that person that people came to ask questions and I would research everything. So that's kind of my brief history, but it was very, very quiet and wait till you're married. But if you don't, then it's not too bad, but we really hope that you do. That was like the message that I got.
To abstain, like, you know, which lots of people get, abstinence only education, but just like not to have sex until marriage.
Right. But it wasn't like, that was definitely the message, but
everyone was having sex. So it's like, we really want you to wait till you're married, but if you don't, we'll talk about it if that ever happens. But it's more so, just don't do it.
Right, right. Okay, we have to actually take our first commercial break. I don't know how that happened, but that went by really fast. Let's hear from my fabulous sponsor, The Pleasure Chest. And I want to remind you that The Pleasure Chest has one New Year's resolution for 2017, and that's to help you have the best sex of your life. Obviously, they're slackers. They have low goals. So you can visit their boutiques in New York, LA, and Chicago and enjoy their free weekly workshops offered in their Pleasure Ed program. Experience sex ed in a fun, non-judgmental, and supportive environment. Whether you're improving your oral sex skills or learning the proper way to wield a whip, the Pleasure Ed program has classes for all experience levels, orientations, and interests. Not only will you learn new skills to take home, but every attendee enjoys 15% off when they come to a workshop. You can also shop at pleasurechest.com, and you'll find the class schedules there for each of the stores. Use coupon code Tristan when shopping online for a free gift with every purchase. So stay with us more from the women of Afrosexology when we come back.
Streaming live, the leader in internet talk radio, voiceamerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit pleasurechest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. Tonight I'm talking with Delisha Saw and Rafaela Fialo, the women behind Afrosexology. So in the description of one of your presentations, I'm just going to read a little quote here. You write, "Oppressive structures and stereotypes about the Black body and sexuality have limited and negatively impacted Black people and their sexual agency." This seems like a good place to start the discussion, because I know that different people face different obstacles to sexual empowerment and liberation. But, and Delisha, you touched on this in your story about growing up and seeing particular representations of Black women. So let's talk specifically about how race and racism affects Black people's relationship to their sexuality.
Yes, there's so much. I mean, colonialization has happened throughout the world, but specifically focusing in on America, from the moment that Black people have been brought to this country, their body has been used and exploited for white supremacy. Whether we were slaves and our body was used for labor, or we were on breeding camps and our bodies were used to produce the next batch of labor, whether we were raped, and so our bodies were sexually exploited, men and women, whether we were beaten, our bodies were never ours. And we were, there was a lot of intentional things that happened throughout the white America's culture to intentionally separate and disconnect Black people from their bodies. And even today, when you look at like past slavery, post-slavery, there's a lot of anti-Black messages everywhere, messages that your Black body isn't beautiful, that your Black body isn't deserving of love, that your Black body isn't deserving of like pleasure. And those things like really feed into you when you see that like that the ideal standard for beauty, for love, who the ideal woman is, who the ideal sexual being is, isn't you. You internalize this feeling that you are not worthy of those things. And so for since we've been here, our body has never been truly ours. We have had to work within the imagination of white supremacy to like figure out how to define Black femininity, Black masculinity, Black sexuality, and it has been limited by what they have thrown at us. And a lot of the things we've been doing has just been reacting to oppression. And so there hasn't been a moment where we can pause and just say, like, you know, if we were really to define Black femininity, what would it mean? If we were really to say, like, these are the traits that we want to be associated with being a Black woman, what would they be? Instead, we're given these traits of you're angry, you're loud, you're messy, you have a bigger butt, like just things that we didn't choose to define that have been thrown at us since the beginning. And so I think we're trying to create a space where people can say, like, I didn't even ask you if we can curse on the show, so I'm not going to do it.
You can curse. You can curse. You can curse.
Okay. We're creating space where we're saying, fuck all of that. And, like, let's redefine for ourselves. Let's figure out what it is that we want to be associated with ourselves and our identities and our Black sexuality and our Black femininity and our Black masculinity and everything in between. And we just have never really had that space throughout culture and society.
I mean, I was struck during your presentation that I went to that you had people go around and talk about like stereotypes of Black women and or what they were told about who they were sexually or their bodies. And, mm-hmm. you know, in a room full of like 40 people, first of all, every person had a different thing, said a different thing. And they were all, I mean, it was like really, it was intense. People were really frank and really honest as they went around. And it struck me that there are these basic notions that like women have of their bodies being sexualized, but I feel like the layer upon layer upon layer of history and story that gets put on Black women's bodies is really, it's like really deep and intense. And in many ways, like white women just don't have that much projected onto them.
Yeah, I agree. I think I'm not a white woman, so I don't know what white women are dealing with, but I do know that there is a lot that is thrown on to Black women, and this is a weird dichotomy of like you're either this like mammy asexual being and you're not like no one sees you as attractive and you're not sexualized at all and you have all of these like other characteristics, or you're this like hyper sexual deviant that you're so sexual that how could anyone even justify raping you? You're already out there as a being. So trying to maneuver those two things when it comes to that spectrum when it comes to that dichotomy when it comes to our sexuality, and then putting on top of that you're seen as like not smart or not beautiful or that you're too loud or that you're just too much or that there's like nothing positive. And I think that was what was really, really hard for me hearing all those women go around, that no one said Black girls are magical. Like, no one said black is beautiful and Black is powerful. Like, everyone had something negative to say. And we didn't even ask for negative stereotypes. We just said, what is something you've heard about being a Black woman? And everyone had heard things that were really deep and hurtful. And the voice that we internally have to fight against daily to get to a place where we can say, Black is beautiful, Black women are magical, Black people deserve pleasure and deserve love and deserve healthy relationships, that you have to like fight through all of that negative shit that is thrown at you since you were a child. to move to a mm-hmm. place of where you can truly stand in love and pleasure. And that is just so sad to me.
Let's talk a little bit about the desexualization part. I'm wondering if you can just briefly define what respectability politics are and talk about its relationship to Black women's sexuality and this notion that women are desexualized. Who wants to take that?
Delisha has
Oh, I can take it.
Great. She has done great research on that.
Oh, so you want me to take it? Okay.
Yeah.
I've studied the history of Black women's sexuality a lot in this country. So I would say that I'm going to define respectability politics as rules. To me, it is rules that white supremacy have thrown at us that we have internalized and are throwing back at ourselves in a way to be deemed acceptable by white culture. And so I think there's two different things. So I think the desexualization of Black people in white America has been that you are so that you're so undesirable, it's been a dehumanization of who we are, seeing us as animalistic and not desirable enough to where there has been a complete desexualization of a group of Black people. And those were the women who would deem us like the caretakers and what we would consider the mammies, or just people who are invisible to society. They don't see you. They don't even think about you when they think about women or femininity or sexuality, that you are invisible to this group or to these people. And that has been a very separate notion than like the respectability politics track. I think respectability politics stems from this idea and this belief that has been put out there by white supremacy in a way to justify the sexual violations and raping of black and brown people in this country, that we're sexual deviants. And so in order to react to that stereotype of us being hypersexual and us being sexual deviants, a lot of people have said, well, we're going to be the complete opposite, and that you shouldn't be sexual, and that you have to be pious, and that you should like hold on to all of these different beliefs, because we don't want to be what white people say we are. So like, why are you so loud, and why are you like wearing those clothes, and why are you being too much? Like, you're just giving it to those stereotypes. And it's, to me, all of it is just a reaction to what white supremacy has given us, and it's not us defining sexuality or our experiences for ourselves. We're just reacting to it. And so I find respectability politics to be very limiting, because it's still letting them win and giving in to this idea or this persona that they have put out and constructed of what Black people are.
And because representation is so important, like, who would you say are your sexual role models, and why?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Rafaela.
Well, I think that someone that I really have enjoyed reading from recently. So I do a lot of my research on sexual trauma and healing. So a lot of the people that I'm reading on are people who are doing work in the community. And have you ever heard of Trisha Rose? She has a book on Black women and talking about sexuality and intimacy called Longing to Tell. And she has a whole bunch of narratives about the experiences that Black women have experienced, not only within their families, but in the community. And it's just like a really, basically everything that we talked about at our sex shop in Sex Down South, it's just so astounding how repetitive these really traumatic stories happen, and on such a large scale. So I think that's something that we always talk about in one sense, but we forget to always mention like how ingrained it is in our society, and not just in Black society, but we know that it happens to a lot of people, unfortunately. Trisha Rose, and then Dr. Gail Wyatt, she is another person who talks about reclaiming sexuality and taking back the lives of stolen women, really focusing on the negative experiences that Black women's bodies have had to undergo, specifically in the United States. And one thing I wanted to say that's talking about like politics and the behaviors of Black women in being dehumanized and desexualized, but also in the same sense being over-sexualized, because on one hand, you know, Black women are looked to be less desirable,
but black women were still raped. They were still assumed to be highly sexual. They were assumed to have to be passive. If somebody wanted them, they didn't really have a voice. So it's just like really getting a lot of contradicting messages from your own community, your own family, and then the outside world of how you really should look at yourself, what things you could be vocal about, you should be passive about, and then how you should in turn react. So like putting that all together, just these a lot of people kind of stumbling in the dark. And that's one of the things that we find so prevalent in our conversations, that people are really pulling out and talking about and feel so much peace when we're in this group, in this safe space, to really challenge one another and share these experiences so we can say, damn, like, this is way too prevalent and I never had this chance to talk about this, so let's do it now. But yeah, so those two people really touch bases on that, and I really appreciate their information.
Delisha,
you want to talk about Chase Gears?
Yeah, so I actually have always found my sexual role models to be in black artists, because there's something about their life experience where they're already living life on the fringes, on the edges, and they're just like closer to, it feels like they're closer to truth to me. And so everything from everyone from Blues Women, from Ma Rainey and Bessie Smith, to Alice Walker and James Baldwin, to even today, I mean, like, I just listened to this like talk that rapper Trina did, and I just found so much strength in their affirmations for how sexy they are, for their acceptance of their sexuality, for them speaking truth about trauma that has happened in the community, for them rejecting stereotypes that have been thrown at them or thrown at all of us, and still holding on to the sacredness of black pleasure, of black love. So there's a lot of artists that I look up to. And then as an academic, I feel like my guiding light and star for my life is Audre Lorde. I just adore everything about her. And she was one of the first people for me who really wrote about sexuality being a source of power that the oppressor uses to try to capture, to suppress your source of knowledge and power. And so reclaiming your sexuality could be getting back that power and that knowledge about self and who you truly are.
Yeah, Audre Lorde is great. Okay, thank you. I just feel like we have to name those people. Like, we have to name the people who are doing the work, because it's like really important. And I feel like especially because within just sex education, there's a lot of lifting up of white voices, and not a lot of talk about black women's voices who are actively writing and talking about sexuality. Okay, we have to take another commercial break. When we come back, we are going to talk more about this. So don't go anywhere. More Sex Out Loud when we return.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan at puckerup.com. That's Tristan at puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud, everyone. I'm talking today with Delicia Saw and Rafaela Fialo, the women of Afrosexology. And I know that you've just celebrated like your 1 year anniversary of doing this work in sex education and doing lots of presentations, lots of different kinds of presentations. Rafaela, what has surprised you the most in the last year? And like, what's come up at presentations? What kind of feedback have you gotten that really has surprised you?
You know, when we first started, we really thought we were going to get some pushback just knowing the history of sexuality in the Black community and how it's so under-discussed. And we were pleasantly surprised and happy at how open and eager everyone was. And even when we did a sex shop with a person inside of a church, we were like, what? Wait a minute. Is this a trick? Are they going to cast us out when we get there? But it was like amazing. We had a range of people from the ages of like 16 to maybe like in their late 80s who were talking about demanding pleasure from their partners and what they were going to stand for and what they wanted more of or less of. And it was just so powerful being in that space to be able to have a younger generation hearing the experiences of the older generation, but also just spreading and sharing that knowledge and being open without feeling like, oh, I can't talk out loud because, you know, this person's my grandma's age. So that was one of the biggest, like, this is just a great feeling to have, knowing that this conversation is not only needed in secret, but it's being welcomed out in open spaces like churches as well. As when we're working in the community and working in like a event center or something like that. So that has been the best part of it. It just makes us so happy. But again, like something that we see very often is, like, for example, we had this masturbation sex shop that we had. Our whole plan was to go in there, talk about tips and tricks, and we had like a whole table of different types of sex toys, and we were going to get down and dirty. But on our event page, we started getting a bunch of comments like, I want to like the event, but I don't want people to see that I liked it. And what are people going to think if they know I'm coming to this event? And we were like, shit, like there's a lot of stuff we're going to have to unpack when we get there. And when we did have the event, it was so true. People were talking about messages they got about masturbating from their church, how it was dirty and shameful, how they would go to hell. But when it came to their brother, well, of course, that message wasn't the same. How they were still, even in their 30s, still trying to figure out how to level themselves and practice self-care through solo sex and how hard it was, and how they just had a lot of negative self-talk that was preventing them from really enjoying it. So it's like these conversations, we know that, yes, pleasure is the root of sex education, to do it in a powerful way, but there are so many other things that we have to make sure that we unpack in a way that is still going to make sure that everyone is feeling calm and respected in the space, but they're still going to be open and willing to think outside the box, challenge themselves, and kind of get down to do the dirty work.
Well, I find that too, that it's just that all the tips and tricks like won't work if you are still wrestling with shame, with guilt, with body image issues, with confidence. Mm-hmm. Like if you can't cut through some of those basic things, the idea that like, I'm going to give you the 8 positions that are going to make you have great sex tonight is just total bullshit. Right?
Right. Bring your sex life on fire. But you know, some of that can be very triggering. So you have to unpack these things and make sure that, you know, you have a place that you can go to within yourself and or someone out in the community that we can unpack that with. So it's been just so powerful to know that we are able to provide that for so many people.
And I would imagine, Rafaela, growing up in the church, you probably never thought you'd be teaching sex classes in a church.
Do you hear what I'm saying? Like,
like that was so astounding to me when she said who the population was and the whole purpose of it. We're like, oh, really? Never would have imagined this in 1,000 years. But yeah, you know, never say never, right?
Mm-hmm. And why? I know that pleasure is so important to you guys, and that, and you center your education around pleasure. Ahmad, I want to hear from you why you think pleasure is so important to sex education.
So pleasure for me is a model of envisioning liberation, right? So for me, or I have seen that in so many conversations around sexual health, it is around harm reduction. So as much as we're trying to, that we need to unpack shame and trauma and all of these things, that when a lot of sex educators go into communities, especially the Black community, the conversation is around HIV prevention and unwanted or unplanned pregnancies, other STIs, preventing rape, and so when we, and other sexual violences. And so when we begin having those conversations and they kind of stop there, we never move toward or past what is next. And so when you ask people, like, you know, what do you want for your, like, what does your most sexually, like, pleasing and healthy life look like for you? They're like, well, you know, I don't want to get pregnant without, like, when I'm young, and I don't want to get an STI, and I don't want to get raped. And my question was, like, but past that, what do you want? And I see the same thing happening in the Black community around liberation. When I ask people, like, what does Black liberation look like for you? And they say, well, I don't want to be killed by police, and, you know, I don't want our schools to be unaccredited. And my conversation is, like, past that. Like, what are we working for? What are we dreaming about? And just past living a life where we're being respected as humans and we're not being violated on a day-to-day basis, what is next? Like, what is it that you want? And how are you moving towards a place where you're not settling for less than what you want? And so sexual pleasure for me is the beginning conversation, agency over your body, agency over your sex life, agency over the intimate relationships around you, and making sure that those are healthy and that those are loving and that those are pleasurable, for me is the beginning of getting people to envision and dream what liberation could look like on an economic, a political, and social level. So that's why pleasure is extremely important to me.
And I think that raises another point, which is that one thing that I struggle with right now as a sex educator is I feel like there's so many horrible things going on in the world, and mm-hmm. people sort of discount the place of sexuality within social justice movements and are sort of like, listen, we've got to talk about people surviving, and we've got to talk about a living wage, and we've got to talk about, like, homelessness and poverty. So, like, your sex talk is just way beyond, you know, way beyond what we need to talk about right now. It's sort of like mm-hmm. an extra. So where do you see these connections between sexual liberation and social justice?
Well, we definitely have those conversations amongst ourselves. Like, is this the right time to be having this conversation? Like, how does this fit into all of the pain and the distrust that our communities are experiencing with the larger side? And, you know, when you think about pleasure and sexuality and just sex in general, sex is going to happen. It happens as a way of reconnecting with your partner, with easing one another and making sure that, you know, you feel calm and safe outside of whatever is going on. People were still having kids. They were getting married. They were trying to find ways to make sure that they were enjoying themselves outside of the very traumatic things that were happening on the outside. And we really believe that pleasure is just the root of everything that you do. If you are living your life in a way that pleases you, that brings you happiness and joy, and you're finding these little things, it is going to surmount to something bigger. It is going to be linked to how you address other people, the type of shit that you will or will not take from other people. You're going to have more power when you're able to demand how you want to please yourself, what type of pleasure you're going to allow or provide to other people. And, like, that's the whole premise of the work that we do. The type of liberation is not only sexual liberation, but it's going to build into economic liberation. It's going to build into
liberation between maybe issues that you're having with your family, being able to stand up for yourself. So that's the bigger picture. And you can't have, you can, but it's not going to be helpful, one conversation without the other. It just goes to us in hand in hand.
And protesting every night is very stressful, having daily anxiety attacks because your president is, this man is extremely stressful. And, you know, knowing that when your body gets tense and your body gets in this, like, defense mode and attack mode, that you, that, like, masturbation and that sex is a tool of putting your body back into a state of love, into a state of pleasure, into a state of calm, which is really important because you being tense and you being stressed and you having anxiety attacks all the time is not going to allow you to continue doing the social justice work that you need to do. And so for me, masturbation is definitely like a tool and an act of resistance because I know that like every day I'm going out and fighting against the system and I need to come home and like reaffirm my body that it is safe, that it is loved, that it is okay. And so that just becomes like the ritual that I do so that I can go back out again tomorrow. And in the midst of me attacking or tearing down what are the oppressive structures, that I can still find the strength in myself to be loving and peaceful and kind towards my brothers and sisters.
Okay, we've got to take another break. That was really inspiring. Okay, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk more with the women of Afrosexology. So don't go anywhere.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I've been talking today with Rafaela Fialo and Delisha Saw from Afrosexology. I'm wondering, in your travels and in speaking to so many different types of people, what you think are still some of the most taboo subjects? What are the things that you feel like people are the most hesitant to talk about, or mm-hmm. or they won't have the conversation at all? Rafaela?
Something that kind of popped in my mind, Black male sexuality. And the lack of flexibility and exploration that it allows for. One thing is that, you know, our main population tends to be people who identify as women, black, ages 24 to like 35-ish, maybe 19 to 35. And when we have a lot of our events, sometimes we'll get messages asking who's allowed in the space, or saying, is this only going to be for women? Are men allowed? And then regardless of our response, a lot of the times it's always people who identify as women in the space. And, you know, actually, excuse me, we have had a lot of people who identify as men message us, though, privately, like through our website, through our Facebook, and through our email, asking us questions about themselves or about, like, norms in the black community. And we're just like, where are you guys at in the community? Like, we have these events going on and no one's showing up. And so that's just something that's really interesting. But we know that, you know, there's definitely a lot of shame projected onto the black male body and setting expectations on how they are supposed to perform, not only with themselves as friends and groups, but also like in relationships, be it romantic, platonic, or just in their families in general. Like before, we were talking about how brothers and sisters are treated differently in terms of what they're allowed to do, how they are expected to explore their sexuality, if at all. So I think that's a huge taboo. You just see so much shame behind that. And I was just thinking of, Demetria, what is the show? What's the show? On HBO, what is it, right?
Insecure.
Oh, Insecure.
Yes, Insecure. And we were talking about that scene on our Facebook Live one day where one character just shared with his partner that he had some experiences with another guy, and she was completely like, oh, well, that makes things different, even though she had just shared her own experiences with kissing a girl or making out with a girl or something like that. And it just really is like a megaphone to the very common experiences that we have in our community with sex and sexuality, where it's just like so much shame and guilt, and it's just not flexible at all. And, you know, if you're a man who sleeps with a man, then, and women, you're definitely not bisexual. You're just gay, but you don't know how to come out. And it's just like really strict. Very restrictive. That's one of the biggest things I can think of.
Delisha, what do you think for taboos?
Yeah, so something that I think comes up often, so after we've done our workshops and our sex shops and people have like unpacked how much shaming happened during our childhood that's influenced their sexuality into adulthood, then they start reflecting on the fact what about my own children and the conversation around raising sex positive children still seems to be difficult. So even though they can understand like the impacts that this had on their childhood and how these childhood impacts during the childhood impacted their adult sexuality, when we say stuff like, well, you should encourage your children to masturbate, that is what they're doing, you shouldn't shame them for that, there's a lot of, well, that's not okay, and they're too young, and you know, that's inappropriate, and my kids, I don't want my kids to be weird. So I still think there's some, there's a lot of taboos around children and what is natural childhood sexual development and sexual exploration and how to encourage your kids to be okay and to explore their bodies and to know that they have a safe space and that they can do this. It's very similar in our radical twerking class when people are talking about how powerful they feel twerking when we show them a video of a 7-year-old who's twerking and the power that she has in her hips. I don't think it is recognized as the same. And it's like, well, that girl's being fast and she's being over-sexualized. And a lot of that fear stems from like, well, if you do this, then other people, like predators, are going to view your children as hypersexual, sexual demons. And so, which is a reality that a lot of people have to deal with. And so not to take away from that, but to also not confine and limit our children and ourselves to just be acting to the many oppressors that are around us all the time. So I think childhood sexuality and that is still a taboo for many, many people.
Well, and how do you encourage young women to obviously be safe, keep themselves safe, but also experience pleasure if they want to experience pleasure? And that could mean, you know, wearing something particular, that could mean masturbating every day, whatever it is, right? I feel like where how do you explain like that your, you know, basically like your body belongs to you and you can do whatever you want with it. But also there are these various strategies you need to do to keep it safe.
Yeah. And that's like the hard part because it's the same thing with the construct of race. Whereas, like, you want to raise your black child to believe that they can do anything possible, and that they can be themselves, and that there's nothing off limits to them. So then there are these very, very real barriers all throughout their life that are going to let them know you are black and you cannot go any further. And so it's the same thing with raising your girls and telling them that you can. I want you to like express your femininity or your womanhood in any way possible, your sexuality in any way possible, but also knowing that there are a lot of barriers that are going to put you that are going to say. What you're doing is dangerous. And so it's hard. I do struggle with that. I struggle with teaching sex positivity when I know there are very, very real negative consequences because we live in such a sex-negative society. And I think I try to not let it limit me, but I also know that there are very real consequences of a lot of this stuff. And I honestly think that that's a place in the sex-positive community that we need to talk about. And I remember once we did a twerk party and I was in the, we put it on Facebook and there was like 1,000 people who said they were coming. And I started freaking out because we had these rules and these guidelines that this is going to be a sex positive space and that consent must be given and don't grab anyone to dance on you. Like don't twerk on anyone without asking them. Like just, we had to put these rules up, but I was very afraid. Like, are we creating situations for sexual predators? Are we creating situations for people to be violated? And that was something that I was like talking to everyone I knew in the sex positive community about, like, how do we negotiate this? How do we figure out how to create a balance where it feels pleasurable and people feel free, but also understanding the risk? And I think that's like, for me, that is like the next part that I need to figure out. Luckily, we were very fortunate that it was a very sex-positive space and that everyone reported having a good time. But I did recognize the fear that I had in promoting sex positivity and how it could attract people who are predators.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously creating safe sexual space is one of the most difficult things to do because it involves like so many different elements and obviously so many different people. But the bigger it gets... Part of the problem is, I think, when it's small, people can really form community and self-police and remind people of like what are our shared values for this space and what's okay and what's not, and people can correct people. But when it gets to be a certain size, it's hard to know that every single person in that room is actively embodying the values that you've sort of set forth, right?
Yeah. That is the challenge.
Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show. I want to tell everyone how they can bring you to their neck of the woods to teach a workshop or give a presentation. You guys can find out more about them on afrosexology.com. You can follow them on Twitter and Facebook at Afrosexology and on Instagram at Afrosexology_. Thank you so much, Delisha and Rafaela. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us. This has been a great conversation.
Thanks, Justin. It's been awesome.
I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be Elle Chase, talking about her brand new book, Curvy Girl Sex. Until then, I might see you at the Curvy Girl Sex book release party in Los Angeles at the Pleasure Chest with Elle. And then later that week, February 4th to 5th, also in Los Angeles, I'll be teaching at the Sexual Health Expo along with a ton of great sexperts. And the keynote speaker is Dr. Ruth Westheimer. So you should definitely come to that if you're in the LA area. And then I'm going out to New York. So if you want to see me and celebrate Valentine's Day a little bit early, February 10th, I'm teaching Kinky Sex for Couples at the Pleasure Chest on the Upper East Side. So stay tuned for all of those. And in the meantime, you can get me on Twitter and on Instagram at Tristan Terramino and the show on Twitter at Sex Out Loud Radio. Thanks. See you next time.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.